This isn't, I say it again, I'm sorry if I'm going over the same ground over and over again and boring you, but this isn't like standing at the counter in a fish shop waiting for your fish supper that you've ordered. Do you get what I'm saying? This isn't like standing at the luggage carousel in an airport waiting for your bag to arrive. Those are things that are organized, going to happen. You can expect them. You're just waiting for them to happen. That's not what this is like. This is not like standing at a bus stop and waiting for a bus to come. You know it's going to come. All you've got to do is wait, be patient. That's not what we're talking about. Those are all things that you might wait for, but those are not what it's like to wait for God. I wanted to try and use an example from history. I'm no historian, so this is kind of caricatured. Think of it more like a cartoon than reality. But this is, I'm taking you back over 200 years, back down to Bantry Bay, of all places, to a group of rebels called the United Irishmen, and they're standing in Bantry Bay waiting for the arrival of their hero, Theobald Wolfetone. Now here's the thing, we're talking 200 years ago. They had no mobile phones, they had no phones of any kind. They couldn't even depend on the post. They didn't know what he was up to. They didn't know the treaty that he had done with the French. They didn't know he'd slipped past the Royal Navy. They didn't know his ships were just within a stone's throw of landing at Bantry Bay. They couldn't know those things, and so they couldn't wait for those things. They were waiting for him. And like I said, I've caricatured it a wee bit. But he was their leader. They were waiting to be instructed by him. They were waiting to be inspired by him. They were waiting to be emboldened by him. They were waiting to be resourced by him. They recognized that without him, they were just a disparate bunch. Okay, see past the caricature. Do you see the point I'm making? We're not waiting on things that God will give us. We're waiting on God. So I want to return to the words of the king of Israel who wasn't prepared to wait on the Lord. I want to talk about the story that gave those words context. There's going to be a wee bit of reading, but it's a great story. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, mobilized his entire army and marched up and laid siege. Lasted so long that a donkey's head sold for 80 shekels. Now just remember that number. It's going to mean something. A donkey's head sold for 80 shekels of silver and a quarter of a cab of seed pods for 5 shekels. As the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried out to him, "Help me, my lord, the king." And the king replied, "If the Lord doesn't help you, where can I get help for you? From the threshing floor, from the wine press?" And then he asked her, "What's the matter?" And she answered, and this is awful, "This woman said to me, 'Give up your son so that we may eat him today, and tomorrow we'll eat my son.' So we cooked my son and ate him. But the next day I said to her, 'Give up your son so we may eat him.' But she had hidden him." And it was in response to the horror of that woman's story. On top of all that he could see all around him, the complete devastation of his kingdom, that this man said, "Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?" Have you ever heard people in that place? "How can I keep faith in God when my mother suffered so much? How can I keep faith in God when I hear the news from Israel and Gaza? How can I keep faith in God when people are forced into the desperation of trying to cross the English Channel on flimsy boats that many of them drown in? How can I keep faith in God when terrorists can walk into a crowd of people and detonate a bomb? It takes courage to wait for God. It takes daring faith to wait for God. It involves going out on a limb, not knowing what he has in mind. Not sure what the end of the story is going to be, but utterly convinced that if God shows up, then the end will be good, whatever it is. That's waiting for God. You see, if you're waiting for the rescue, if you're waiting for the healing, if you're waiting for the provision, if you're even waiting for the answers, tragedy is that while you're waiting for those things, you might miss God when he turns up. God finally did turn up in this story of famine and siege. And he spoke to his prophet Elijah very directly, very specifically, in verifiable detail. Here's what happened. Elijah replied, "Hear the word of the Lord." Remember what I said earlier about a donkey's head being sold for 80 shekels of silver? Hear the word of the Lord. This is what the Lord says. "About this time tomorrow, a seah," which is 4 kilograms, "a seah of finest flour will sell for a shekel. And 2 seahs of barley will sell for a shekel at the gate of Samaria." And the officer on whose arm the king was leaning said to the man of God, "Look, even if the Lord should open the floodgates of heaven, could this happen?" And Elijah said, "You will see it with your own eyes, but you'll not eat any of it." When you've given up on waiting on God, then you've given up any faith in him at all. This man was saying, in effect, what can God do? You're dreaming. These are just God stories. We live in the real world. We need a real solution. So let me read to you the rest of the story. Look, I know you know the story, but it's such a good story. "Now there were 4 men with leprosy at the entrance of the city gate. They said to each other, 'Why stay here until we die? If we say we'll go into the city, the famine's there, and we'll die. If we stay here, we'll die. So let's go to the camp of the Syrians and surrender. If they spare us, we live. If they kill us, we die.'" Pretty bold. "At dusk they got up and they went to the camp of the Syrians. And when they reached the edge of the camp, no one was there. For the Lord had caused the Syrians to hear the sound of chariots and horses and a great army, so that they said to each other, 'Look, the king of Israel has hired the Hittite and the Egyptian kings to attack us.' So they got up and fled in the dusk and abandoned their tents and their horses and donkeys. They left the camp as it was and ran for their lives. And the men who had leprosy reached the edge of the camp, entered one of the tents and ate and drank. They took silver and gold and clothes and went off and hid them. And they returned and they entered another tent and took some things from it and hid them also. And then they said to each other, 'What we're doing is not right. This is a day of good news, and we're keeping it to ourselves. If we wait until daylight, punishment will overtake us. Let's go at once and report this to the royal palace.' So they went, called out to the city gatekeepers and told them, 'We went into the Syrian camp and no one was there. Not a sound of anyone, only tethered horses and donkeys and the tents left just as they were. And the gatekeepers shouted the news, and it was reported within the palace. And the king got up in the night, and he said to his officers, I'll tell you what the Syrians have done to us. They know we're starving, so they've left the camp to hide in the countryside, thinking they'll surely come out, and then we'll take them alive and get into the city. And one of his officers said, have some men take 5 of the horses that are left in the city. Their plight will be like that of the rest of the Israelites left here. Yes, they'll be like all these Israelites who are doomed. So let's send them to find out what happened. And so they selected 2 chariots with their horses. The king sent them after the Syrian army. And he commanded the drivers, go and find out what's happened. They followed them as far as the Jordan. They found the whole road strewn with the clothing and the equipment the Syrians had thrown away in their headlong flight. So the messengers returned and reported to the king, and the people went out and plundered the camp of the Syrians. And so, a seah of the finest flour sold for a shekel, and 2 seahs of barley sold for a shekel, as the Lord had said. Now the king had put the officer on whose arm he leaned in charge of the gate. And the people trampled him in the gateway and he died. Just as the man of God had foretold when the king came down to his house. It happened as the man of God had said to the king, about this time tomorrow a seah of the finest flour will sell for a shekel and 2 seahs of barley for a shekel at the gate of Samaria. The officer had said to the man of God, look, even if the Lord should open the floodgates of heavens, could this happen? And the man of God had said, you will see it with your own eyes, but you'll not eat of any of it. That's exactly what happened to him. The man had come to the conclusion that this was a situation that not even God could fix. And he was logical. Even if the siege was lifted today, there's nothing in the storehouses. It would take a whole season of planting and harvest before there could possibly be food in the market. And in the meantime, food would need to be imported, and that would mean inflated prices. And the very notion of a bargain discounted food was out of the question. Not even God could work that out. Can I remind you that our God is the Father of creativity? Our God is the source of inspiration. He is the fount of imagination. He's the ultimate lateral thinker. Never ever think that any situation is too big or too difficult for him to resolve. It's just not going to happen. Do you remember in his name, shepherd boy, fired a stone out of a simple sling and brought down Goliath, the champion of the Philistine army, so that a military stalemate was brought to an end and peace was achieved on the field of battle. Where was the logic in pitting a shepherd boy against a giant of war? God found a solution there that weapons could never find. In his name, an old man, ridiculed by his entire nation as out of date and out of fashion, up against 400 younger and more popular opinion leaders, called down fire out of the sky to consume a waterlogged sacrificial ox and restored the faith of the nation as they confessed in wonder, the Lord, he is God. Can I just remind you that the one who dreamed up the color and the spectacular wonder of our universe wasn't there before he thought of it. The one who invented the properties of matter that holds it all together and makes it run. The one who sees the very molecular structure of the material that we touch every day and is not bound by our walls and our limitations. This one will never be without the means to resolve any situation. But that doesn't mean he will. that doesn't mean he will. Or it doesn't mean that he will resolve it in the way that we want him to. What I've been trying to say this morning, I hope I've been connecting. What I've been trying to say this morning is that we shouldn't be waiting for solutions or waiting for resolutions. We should be waiting for God. He is the solution. He is the answer. He's the resolution. Those who wait for God will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings as eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They'll walk and not faint. But if God has promised a particular solution, don't ever imagine that anything in heaven or hell can stand in his way. That man who scoffed at the promise of God could never have imagined the Syrian army leaving all their belongings behind. But God not only imagined it, he brought it to pass. I wrote this down. I thought I would skip it over, but I'm going to say it. I want you to know this morning that God is worth waiting for. He's worth depending on. He's worth your loyalty. He's worth your admiration. He's worth your worship. So let's please don't be pursuing what he can do for us. Let's wait for him. Let's listen out for him. Let's learn to appreciate him. Just as we wrap up, one day the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Don't be afraid, Abram. I'm your shield. I'm your very great reward. And that's what we've been trying to say this morning. And if you're struggling to grasp that that's the truth of this morning, God says, I'm your shield. I'm your very great reward. If you're struggling, don't worry, because so did Abram. Sovereign Lord, he said, what can you give me? I'm childless. This is Abram, the father of many nations. God says to him, I'm your very great reward. And all he can respond with is, what can you give me? All he can do is throw up an impossible challenge to God. I'm an old man. I've got no children. Tell you what, God solved that one too. And so this morning, can we start again to build our trust and confidence in the God who will never be confounded? Can we begin again to understand that he is our reward? Everything else is just incidental. Dare to wait for God. I'm done.